This Sunday Show with Ed Finn.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And a very good evening and welcome to the Sunday Show. It's Joe Harrington in for Ed Finn, and I'm delighted to have in studio Emily Wiseband. Emily is a Grammy Award winner. She is a singer-songwriter. She's from Nashville. And she's been to Ireland before, I understand, Emily.
I have. It's my second time in 6 months.
Wow. Okay, so before we talk about your time in Ireland, before we talk about the various songs that you've written, I'd like to know a little bit about yourself and where you grew up and who informed you musically.
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Virginia. I was born right outside of Washington, D.C., and then I spent the rest of my childhood about 45 minutes south of there in a place called Fredericksburg. And my dad played music around the house. I woke up every morning to hearing him pick on his guitar in the living room. And I'm one of six kids. So one Christmas, he had this dream of having a family band, like me and all my siblings. So I remember going out to the Christmas tree one year, and there was one of every instrument that you could possibly think of. And I think he just expected everyone to pick one up and start a band, and I'm the only one who did. And so I picked up the guitar, and he taught me some chords. And
how old were you?
I was probably 9, and I started, learning songs on guitar, just going to guitartab.com and learning songs.
Exactly. And what songs, obviously at that stage you weren't writing, so what sort of songs would you sing?
Oh, I remember singing Don't Dream It's Over. That
Crowded House.
Yeah, Crowded House. And I sang so much of that. I was learning a lot of John Mayer songs, a lot of Michelle Branch songs. Yeah. I kind of loved that early 2000s era of music.
And did you ever go retro, ever go back and, or did your dad ever say to you, now, Emily, look, this is the real music you need?
Oh, yeah. Joni Mitchell was constantly going in our house, the Carpenters, Cat Stevens. Okay. He was always singing Cat Stevens songs. Yeah. So, yeah. And then we had a healthy dose of Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole. And
see, all the Rat Pack. The Rat Pack.
Yeah, but he would always talk to me about songwriters. And he told me about Nashville. And he said that they're behind all the songs I know and love. Other people wrote them a lot of times. The artist.
Yeah.
Didn't just write them by themselves like most people probably think. And
Burt Bacharach, who we lost recently. Yeah. And you look at his body of music and you go, wow, I didn't know he wrote that.
Exactly. Yeah. And so he told me about Skip Ewing and Alan Shamblin and all these songwriters in Nashville. And he said, if you want to write songs, that's the place to be. And so I was 11 and I wrote my first song and I played it for him and he cried. And I remember feeling unstoppable in that moment. I was 11 years old and I just moved the immovable. I felt I was a sorcerer or something.
Okay, so that was your high.
That was my high. The bug bit me that day and I thought, what else can I move? Who else can I make cry? Who else can I make feel something that they weren't feeling?
And what was the song about, as a matter of interest?
It was about Jesus dying on the cross.
Okay.
I was raised in church and it was just,
And is your dad is a person of faith or Christian?
Yeah, he doesn't like the word Christian, but person of faith is a believer. He likes to say he's a believer. He was an atheist till he was about 32.
Okay.
And then he just had a hard upbringing that kind of made him just mad at God. I think there's a whole story there, but he connected with God kind of right before I was born. And so I wasn't raised very religious, but I was raised knowing God and knowing about this person called Jesus, who was just a really cool guy. So I was kind of raised like that. And he always told me to write what I knew, and I wasn't dating yet because I was 11.
Yeah. Well, so I hope not.
Church and God, because that's what I knew. And I just felt so powerful, and it was my first little glimpse into the power of music. And
so that was your first step, and you wrote that song and you were empowered, I suppose, at that stage. So what were the next steps before you kind of start playing professionally or before you start doing any gigs? What was the next steps?
Well, I came home every day from school and I wrote it was homework. I would write for an hour. It didn't matter if I got a verse of a song or two lines or a stupid melody. I would just do it every single day. And there was a man at my church growing up who said there's a school in Nashville called Belmont and they have a songwriting major. Okay. And you should submit. And it was a hard program to get into. I think 12 people got in to the program the year that I got okay. in. And I submitted a portfolio and I got in. And so I moved down to Nashville.
And when you say, at this stage, were you thinking of, for the want of a better word, stardom? Or were you just thinking, I just like writing and I just like playing?
I was thinking, I just like writing songs and I just want to be better. I didn't even know like, how big a career in writing or I had no idea. I don't know what I was thinking. Sometimes I look back on it and I'm like, I was kind of a psychopath to move to a city and think I could make it in this city of like thousands of people moving there constantly. And so,
well, sometimes that kind of thing can work in your favor. The fact that you don't realize, you know,
I was just naive and starry-eyed and I thought, I just love writing songs. My dad loves it. We vibe on it together and I just want to get better at it. And they have a major. So I'm going to go move there and get better at it. And then long story short, my freshman year.
And to explain to people, freshman year, because not everyone, we don't have to say. So we have, you have junior and high school, and then freshman year is your first year in college,
is
it?
My first year in college, And I was in the dorms where I lived, and there was a girl down the hall who walked by my room and heard me playing a song I was about to send to my dad, because I would still send him the songs I was writing and he'd give me feedback and he was always honest and I was learning a lot at school, so I was just sending him songs. And she said, Belmont does this showcase and a publisher comes and legit songwriters come and you should submit and you could play a show for them. And I said, no way, I'm not doing that. I'm too young, I'm too new. I was kind of prideful. I just wanted to like get better in private before I like started showing people.
And were you ever nervous to perform, even going back to your dad, just to sing in front of your dad?
I have horrific stage fright. Okay. Like still to this day, I have to take like deep breaths before I do it. Because I honestly don't love performing, but it's such a powerful thing to do, but I'm terrified of it. So it's definitely the thorn in my side, but it keeps me on my toes.
Yes.
And I said, no way. She said, okay, suit yourself. And 3 days later, no lie, I got an email congratulating me on getting into the showcase. And she had submitted me behind my back and I got in. And there was a man there that night who owned a publishing ran a publishing company with Warner. And he said, I think you could be a hit songwriter. Come to my office in a year. Like, work really hard and get better for a year. Okay. Come to my office and play me.
And what did you think about when he said that? I think he could be a hit maker. Did you think?
It lit a fire under me. Okay. I remember thinking I love writing and I want to get better at it. But that was my first moment of like, oh, maybe I could actually do this. And so I was stoked. I'll never forget. He wrote my name on an envelope and stuck it in his back pocket. And I was on cloud 10 billion. I called my dad. I was like, Dad, I met this publisher tonight and he wrote my name on an envelope and he told me to come to his office in a year. And I started going to all these songwriting workshops and just writing with anyone at school who would write with me. And in a year, I went to his publishing house and he offered me a publishing deal. And that's
okay,
kind of when I started doing it professionally.
So you got that, which is fantastic. What about the first song that you recorded and the first time you heard it on radio? What was that like?
I remember the first song I ever got cut was a song by a Texas country band called the Josh Abbott Band.
Okay.
And he did a duet with this country singer, Carly Pierce. And I was watching that movie, Something Borrowed. Have you seen that movie?
I don't think I have. Who was in it? Who was in it?
I couldn't even tell you who's in it.
Okay.
I'd have to like Google it. But there's this one scene where this...
I've lost the quiz. Sorry.
I know. I have too. I can't even tell you. I can't even tell you who's in it. But basically, this guy and this woman are getting married, and the guy hooks up with her best friend before the wedding. And they get a little drunk, and they're in the car kind of talking about it. And she goes, it was a mistake. We were drunk. And he looks at her, and he says, I wasn't that drunk. And I just remember going, ooh, that could be a song. And so I wrote a song called I Wasn't That Drunk. And it ended up, that was my first song I ever got recorded in it. I've heard it on country radio a couple times. My first project I ever put out, I wrote this like minute and 54 second song called Identity Crisis. And it was all about, you know, my early 20s and just the figuring it out process. And I think my mom sent me a video of it playing. I never heard it on the radio, but my mom heard it. She sent me a video of it. And I just remember thinking, that's awesome. And
yeah, well, mothers will always hear your stuff, so for sure.
Yeah, she remembers everything. And I think at that point, I'd built such a songwriting career.
Okay.
I had already kind of put my defense mechanisms in place of not getting too excited about things.
Keeping your feet firmly on the ground.
Yeah, I just remember, like, you know, my dad told me that Nashville was a heartbreak town and I would get my heart broken. And I think that happened in my songwriting career a few times, to where I stopped letting myself get excited about things. Just to, you know, it was a defense mechanism, I think, to keep going. And it's sad because in a sense you numb yourself to the hurt enough to keep going, but you also numb yourself to the celebration and the joy of like a good thing happening. And so I think it's something for me to work on.
But I think it's for a lot of people, it's the right thing to do, because if you want to protect yourself from, you know, some people are easily devastated if somebody says something small to you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you've got to protect yourself.
I learned early on that this is not going to be a long career if I was latching on to every little rejection. And so I think by the time I was putting out music out as an artist, the good things that happened, I think I had already put that defense mechanism in place. And I think that's why I can't really remember, because I never really let myself get too excited about anything, you know?
So I'm fascinated by collaboration. And before I talked about collaboration, I want you to have a think about something, which so that at the end of this interview, you'll be able to tell me the song you're most proud of and the song that you wish you had written. So just have a think about those two. And I just want to go to collaboration. And I know you've written with so many great people. You've written for so many great artists, everyone from Keith Urban. I know you've written with Hilary Scott from Lady A. How does it work, collaboration? Because you're a musician, you do melodies, you do the lyrics, and they do the same. How do you get the consensus, or how does that work?
I think it's more of a human process than people outside the writing room realize or give it credit for. There's really no mathematical rhyme or reason as to like how a song starts happening. It's really just three human beings get in a room and start talking about life. Sometimes someone has a thought in the car on the way over and says, hey, what do you guys think about this? Sometimes you're going through ideas mindlessly for an hour before somebody says something that makes the whole room light up. And sometimes you just are talking about life for 2 hours and somebody says something and everybody goes, that's a song. So it definitely is different every single day. And I think everybody knows when it's right. It's the kind of thing where if the two of us are talking and we're trying to, you know, figure out an idea and I say something and you like it, but it hasn't lit something on fire in you, I think everyone can kind of sense that. And I think there's a lot of trust in sitting there and continuing to dig until something does hit that kind of lights everybody on fire.
Our egos left at the door,
Have to. You can't. I heard a quote the other day, like, creativity and ego can't thrive in the same place. Mm-hmm. And I remember writing, it was my first write with this huge writer, Ashley Gourley. He's had like, I don't know, 50 country number ones or something like that, something crazy. And it was my first time writing with him, and I went in the room with him and I was so nervous. I was probably a year into my publishing deal, and we're sitting there and I said, I have to be honest with you, I'm terrified to write with you. I'm just worried you're going to think I suck and you're never going to want to do it again. And he said, you're scared to write with me? I said, yeah. He goes, I'm nervous to write with you. He said, I feel old and washed up, like I'm never going to have another hit. And you're like the new fresh face in town. And
this Sunday show with Ed Finn.
Sunshine, 106.8. Sunshine, 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to the Sunday show. It's Joe Harrington in for Ed Finn. My special guest is Emily Wiseband. Emily, of course, is a Grammy Award winner. She is also a fabulous singer-songwriter. She's written some amazing songs. And I asked you just before the break to have a think about, you know, the songs you would have loved to have written and a song you are most proud of. We'll start with the song you're most proud of.
I would say the song I'm most proud of is probably a song that recorded by a pop artist named Camila Cabello. And it's called consequences. And the reason I'm most proud of it is because I had to admit something that day in the room with my co-writers that I was really ashamed of. It took a lot of
And are you bravery. Are you going to share that with us?
I, being raised in church, just, you know, didn't have sex. I wasn't trying to have sex before I was married because okay. I just, growing up in church, they tell you, like,
it's a belief. It's a belief.
Yeah, it's a belief.
It's fair enough.
And it's an easy rule for a Christian kid to kind of cling to because you can't help if you're jealous, but you can help for the most part if you're having sex. So that was kind of the rule I clung to. And when I turned 22, I ended up losing my virginity, giving my virginity. I gave it. They took it. It's all the same. And I ended up getting chlamydia. I was so ashamed. I felt like it was God punishing me for having sex, which was not true. I worked through that and, you know, had to shake off some of, like, my immature beliefs about God and who he is a little bit. But I just remember having to go to a rite before I went to the pharmacy to pick up the medication for the okay. chlamydia.
And yet, that was the worst part, was it? Going in to get the handing
yeah,
the prescription.
Yeah, I was just so ashamed. Yeah, like, yeah. being raised in church and doing the one thing I thought I'd never do before marriage and then getting an STD.
So you're kind of more worried about what other people thought of you than...
Absolutely. Yeah. And, yeah, just... I felt dirty. I felt gross. And, So I went to my rite and I was just... bogged down with all the shame okay. and I had to my boyfriend at the time said to me, he said, Emily, God doesn't punish you like that. Just life has consequences. Like, you have sex with someone who has chlamydia and you get chlamydia. And I thought, in the midst of my grief and my tears, I thought, that's a good song idea. So I wrote it down and I went into a room with these two women, Nicole Gallion and Amy Wadge, who lives in the UK. And I almost couldn't open my mouth to speak because I'm a word vomiter. So I knew if I opened my mouth, I would tell them that I had chlamydia and I was stopping by the pharmacy on the way home from the rite to pick up my prescription for the medicine. And I just remember staring at the piano and thinking, like, I need to get out of here. I need to, like, tell them my sister's in a car crash and I need to go pick her up, or I just can't be here. I can't tell them this. Like, they'll think I'm gross or whatever. And I just heard these words, like, in my brain, like, so clearly, like, be a writer. And I thought, crap, I know what that means. I have to tell them and I have to turn this into something beautiful.
And so, how did you write that song without going into all the detail? That, or did you?
Oh, I went into all the detail.
Did
yeah,
you?
I said,
okay.
guys, I have chlamydia, and I have to tell you about it, and I have to go to the pharmacy after I leave here. And it was this. I remember just sobbing, and this woman, Amy. I knew Nicole, but Amy had just met me like 30 minutes ago, and she was looking at me like, it's okay. Like, I was like, I have this song and it had consequences, and it'd be like loving you had consequences, and we don't have to write it if it's a pity write. If you guys don't like the idea, we don't have to write it. And they were like, no, we like the idea. And so we ended up writing the song, and we just took the chlamydia out of the song, but
yes.
we wrote a song about how, you know, now that we're apart, like, I'm having to deal with
okay.
all these things, like putting my life back together, like loving you had consequences. And Amy is good friends with Ed Sheeran. Ed Sheeran has a whole project called Songs with Amy or something like
yeah.
that. And Amy sent the song to Ed and he loved it. And he said, my friend Camilla is doing a solo project and would you mind if I sent her the song? And so he sent it and she loved it and it ended up going to pop radio like the following year. And I just remember feeling so proud of myself for being brave and seeing that admitting something paid off. And I remember sitting, this is one moment that I do remember, sitting in my garage the following year, and Consequences came on the radio when I was sitting in my garage in the car, and I just remember having this moment of, like, it was this full circle beautiful moment of, like, wow, that's my calling in life, is to go in and admit the hard things, and maybe a year later I'll be sitting there hearing.
So that's the moment I was talking about, when you sit down and you hear a song that you wrote that you're very proud of, and you hear it, and then you and for it to be played on the radio is like a big deal then, isn't
it? Yeah, it was a huge deal. I remember thinking, like, wow, this is beauty from ashes, 100%. And chlamydia is a good STD to get. It's curable.
I don't know anything about it.
Well, you're lucky. It's not fun, but it's curable.
No, so. I heard. Listen, you're not going to paint me into any corners now. That's for sure. But look, at the, and I appreciate you sharing that. And the fact that you've shared it with your friends on that day, and the fact that you were able to get it out of your head and put it onto paper, and you just expelled it, and that was it. And you can laugh about it now, and you can sometimes, because there are times in life, I think for everybody, you could be walking along, you could be sitting on a bus or a train or something, and something crosses your mind that you were ashamed of, and you just suddenly get really embarrassed, and you're on your own, and you think about it, and that happens, you know, with people, with everybody, I'm assuming that's, you'd be doing something and just comes into your head, and you just get that horrible feeling in your stomach.
Oh,
you know?
Shame is the thief of so many things. And it's funny, because when I signed my record deal, I'm not in my deal anymore. It was not life-giving to me, so I got out of it. But when I signed my deal, I remember the PR girl telling me, like, hey, don't tell that story. And me thinking, like, why? Okay. Yeah. And so I never did. But then I got to a point where I was like, that's stupid. It's my story to tell. I'm going to tell it. And I started telling it more. And I had so many women or men even come up to me and say, like, I actually had chlamydia last week. And I was so ashamed of it. And I felt like I felt so alone. Yeah. And I felt like just so dumb. And you admitting that.
And just for anyone tuning in, the show isn't all about chlamydia, by the way.
No, it's not.
It's about, no, it's only.
But if you're out there and you have it, you're not alone, and it's curable. You'll be okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you're very loved.
And you might even get to write a song, not as good as Consequences, but you could write a song. And you can even name and shame as well, if you want, in that song, whoever gave it to you, you know. But there you go. So that's the song you're most proud of. Any song that you would have liked to have written?
God, there's so many songs I would have loved to have written. I think the first song I ever wished I wrote was Chasing Pavements by Adele. Yeah. I will never forget where I was when I heard it. I was downstairs in my basement. I was probably like, I don't know how old I was, but I was still living at my parents', and I was downstairs, and we had music videos playing on the TV in the other room, and I just heard this song from the other room, and I thought, what is that? Yeah. And I went out and I looked, and it was this lady named Adele. And I
think it's her phenomenal voice and her delivery and everything. Yeah.
And I remember watching the music video and the two dancers in the car accident, like, laying on the sidewalk, and they were like doing a whole dance routine on the sidewalk. And I just was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Yeah. And I love when you hear a song and you remember exactly where you were when you first heard it. And that was like one of my first experiences with that. And I just think it's a phenomenal song.
And she's an incredible artist. Yeah. But I remember thinking when she was headlining Glastonbury, because Glastonbury is real rock and roll. And I was thinking, well, a lot of her stuff is quite slow. I think Chasing Pavements, one of the, and Rolling in the Deep or something, would be their kind of more up tempo. And the rest are kind of very downbeat, telling stories, and yet she held the stage amazingly well. And she is probably, you know, an inspiration for other songwriters as well, because she tells it as it is. She tells it, you know, about, you know, a lot of people like to go around and pretend they've never been hurt by love, or they're the ones that gave the hurt, or it never bothered me. But, you know, honesty and truth and beautiful singing will go a long way for sure.
I love seeing videos of her performing, and it's just her on a stage, like, spotlight, and everybody is, like, just...
I just want to get on to what you're currently doing musically. And, you know, you've written some amazing articles. And I will go back to how you managed to be writing a song for K-pop or BTS. And, you know, I don't know how that how that would come about. Actually, I'll ask you now, how did that come about? Because it's kind of really strange for a country singer. And, you know, for me, I just think that, you know, all the boy bands of the world, you know, they go full circle, whether it's going to the Jackson 5, to the Osmonds, to there's the K-pop sensation, and and then there's BTS, One Direction, all these. So you're a million miles away from that. So how did that happen? Or are you?
I have no clue how it happened. Here's all I know. I get a text one day from my sister, who's also my publisher. And she said, hey, there's a boy band in Korea that reached out and want you to write something for them. They have a track. Here's the track. And they just want you to go and sing some stuff on the track and send it back to them. And I was like, okay. So she sends me this track. And I went into the studio. We loaded up. I just sang something random. I spent 10 minutes on
it. When they sent you a track, what did it consist of?
It was just an instrumental of Boy With Love, the song that it ended up being in. It was just the instrumental. There was no lyrics. There was no melodies. It was just the instruments.
That's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, and I loaded into the computer, and I got in front of a microphone, and I just started singing some random stuff. I was just, honestly, like, it was gibberish. I just sang for, like, 2.5-3 minutes, and I sent it back to my sister, and I said, here you go. I don't know really what they want with this, but cool. Sweet. And then I truly completely forgot about it. Like 6 months go by, I never heard anything back. Like,
what year was this now?
This was 2000. I feel like late 2018 is when they sent me the track. I just sang a bunch of stuff on it. I sent it back. I don't hear anything. And I honestly kind of forgot about it. And I'll never forget, I was in a cab in New York City the following February in 2019. February or March, and I got a text saying, hey, congrats on the new BTS single. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, you wrote the new single, right? And I'm like, I wrote something, but I didn't know it was the new single. And they were like, yeah, it comes out like next week. Congrats. I was like, okay, cool. I had never heard it. I didn't know, like, I just sent a bunch of gibberish and like crazy stuff. I had no idea what it was, and I was honestly almost scared to listen to it, because I thought, oh no, I'm gonna have bad imposter syndrome if like what I sent and what they're just giving me credit to give me credit, like I'd never heard it. And so I thought, okay, well, I guess I'll just wait till it comes out to hear it. And the night it comes out, I get tagged like, wow, this new song, like BTS featuring Halsey. And they had, like, tagged me in it. And so I didn't even know Halsey was on it. I found out on Instagram the night before it came out. And sure enough, my publisher texts me the next morning, and he goes, holy crap, the whole first minute of the song is what you sent.
Wow.
And so I went and I listened to it, and I was just like, how is this happening? And it was just, it was as much of a surprise to me as...
And they sell, like, in the millions in that market.
It was wild. It was a really big...
So you looked in your bank account and said, wow, that was the best 3 minutes of my life.
Wow. I kind of remember, and this is going to sound bad, but this just goes to show you, like, we are totally vessels, and God's always trying to keep me humble at all costs. Yeah. I was almost in a bad mood, because I remember that day I had a long write, and I did not feel like going to the studio to sing on this track. Like, it was intimidating to me, and I remember kind of complaining to my sister, like, ugh, I don't feel like doing this today. She was like, just go do it. And then it ended up turning into that. And I remember thinking, like, God, and I can't even be big-headed about it, because I was in a bad mood that day and didn't want to do it. So, but I am so grateful for BTS for, like, reaching out to me and treating me so well. And their fans are so loyal to them, too. And their fans have been great to me. And I just, they took what I started and just totally turned it into a BTS smash. So I'm forever thankful for them letting me be a part of that, because it was so cool to create something with somebody across the world and never even like meet in person. And
That is such a great story, Emily. You're listening to Sunshine 106.8, Dublin's easy place to relax. It's the Sunday Show with Joe Harrington in for Ed. I'm in the company of Grammy Award winner Emily Wiseband, and we're going to play the song that has made you so proud. This is Consequences.
This Sunday Show with Ed Finn.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're welcome back to the Sunday Show. It's Joe Harrington in for Ed, and my special guest is Emily Wiseband. And Emily has been chatting about her music and chatting lots of stuff. But I want to talk about when you won the Grammy. Tell us, first of all, how the process happened. How did you feel? And when you were there and you heard your name called out, just tell us the story.
This was a plot twist in my life, for sure. I was telling somebody this yesterday, so I'm all primed up to tell the story, but I'll keep it shorter than I kept it for them. We were talking earlier about being raised in church and virginity and the whole thing. And so when I wrote Thy Will, which is the song we won the Grammy for, I was not feeling God, if you will. I kind of walked away from the whole, like, God thing for a minute. I just had a faith crisis, like growing up, being raised to believe something and then becoming an adult. I think we all have that moment where we have to decide what we believe for ourselves. So I was kind of in the middle of that. And at the time, I was working in a lot of country music, and they reached out and they said, hey, Hillary Scott from Lady A is doing a Christian record with her family, and they want you to come in and write with her for it. And so I went in, and I'm pretty sure I had like a beer belly from being hung. I was hungover, I'm pretty sure, like from being at the bar the night before, and just kind of like I was wilding out, you know? And so I walked in, and she had just gone through a miscarriage. And she said that, and she's shared this publicly, so I feel like I can share it. She said she was rocking her baby to sleep, and she just felt like she had to have another baby. Like, she felt like God was kind of nudging her to have another child, and she's like, are you sure? And he said, yeah, and so she did, and she got pregnant, and they ended up losing the pregnancy and losing the baby. And she said she was so confused. Like, she could not figure out why God would nudge her to do something like get pregnant and then let her lose the baby. She felt so abandoned and just kind of like led into the desert and then left there. And she said every time she went to pray, she just couldn't find the words. She was at a loss, and all she could find herself saying was, thy will be done. It was like all she had. And she said, that's the song I want to write. I want to write it. Thy will be done. And I remember at the time, I had an empathy for what she was going through. I was 22, so I didn't know what a miscarriage was like, but I definitely had empathy, and I was raised in church, so I knew the language, the church, the Christian music language, if you will. So I thought, okay, let's write it. And we wrote it. But to be honest, like, my head was in it more than my heart was. A few weeks later, we got a call that she was recording it for the record. I think Ricky Skaggs helped produce it. And a few months after that, they said it was the single, and then it ended up being like a 28-week number one, and we got nominated for a Grammy. And I just remember it was such a cool moment, because I was in the middle of this faith crisis when we wrote it, and then I'm standing there on a Grammy stage a year later in front of people who had been doing this way longer than me and probably deserved it way more than I did, in a dress that many of the Christians there did not approve of.
Yes.
My speech was horrible. I think I got laryngitis like 3 days before, and I had lost my voice. And so I think in my speech I said, like, I have to pee or something like that. It was really not, you can watch it on YouTube and make fun of me like the rest of the people in the comments, but it was kind of a horrible speech. But it was a really powerful moment for me, because I remember standing on this stage looking at all of these people and just feeling God go, like, you didn't really care about me that day, and you weren't really vibing with me that day, but that's okay. Like, I was vibing with you. Like, I cared about you, and look where you are. And like, you're not doing this because you're enough to do it, or because you're perfect, or because you follow all the rules. you're doing this because I've chosen you to do it, and I've given you the gift, and I'm so excited to use you. And it was just this really freeing moment for me. It honestly marked the end of my faith crisis in a lot of ways, because I thought, oh, wow, this isn't really about rule following. It's just about me and God, like, being friends.
So the Christian lobby is pretty big in the U.S., as we know. How do people who are people of faith reconcile all the stuff that down through the years, not just in America, you know, the sexual abuse stuff that in America, but just in Ireland and Britain and Europe and all that, because this country definitely divorced itself from the church.
Yeah.
Big time, because Ireland would be perceived as a, you know, very Catholic country. And I know a lot of people still go to church, but there's an awful lot of people felt very, very let down by the whole, all the stuff that happened. And it doesn't seem to have resonated as much within the Christian community, in my perception, is in the States. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a really interesting, it's a great question. I think the church is being very challenged right now. I think anytime something becomes a movement and something gets humans' grimy paws all over it, it gets tampered with, and it gets, there's a stain on it. And so I personally think there's an obsession with religion where, you know, people are more obsessed with the church as an institution than they are with who God is and who Jesus is. And I think it's really sifting through people in church right now, like who actually is interested in who God is and following Jesus and following God and like following the way of that, rather than just like the truth that's regurgitated over and over and over again, and the judgment and the box that people have put God in. And I think Christians, I don't love the word Christian to use for myself, because in a lot of ways I think you know, you hear the word Christian, people immediately tack on 12 things that they think that means God, and it getting in the way of people knowing God for who God is, not for who people have projected onto him to be. So.
And that was my phone. I thought I turned it off. Sorry about that. So you said you were in Ireland twice in the last 6 months, obviously now.
Yes.
And you were here 6 months ago. For what purpose were you here?
For my honeymoon.
Congratulations.
I got married.
I was going to say, I'm sorry to hear about that, but I know I'm going to say.
I know. Sometimes it's I'm sorry. Some days it's congratulations.
No, congratulations. Congratulations. So what made you choose Ireland as a matter of interest?
You know, neither one of us had ever been. We both have history here, like family history.
Okay.
He has family on
and
his
tell
side
us
from
your
Ireland.
Tell us your husband's name.
His name is Dylan.
Yeah, and I read a little about it, and he plays. We know nothing about is it baseball he plays?
Baseball, yeah.
Baseball. We know nothing about baseball. all we know is Field of Dreams and the movie or stuff like that. That's about it.
He's a pitcher. He's 6'4". He looks like a Viking.
Yeah. Well, he's in the right part of the world to look like a Viking. Yeah.
He's definitely, it's America's favorite pastime.
Yeah. So, I was in Fenway Park once, years
ago.
Yeah, many ones. And I learned that the word rain check came from Fenway Park, because it's written on the tickets, and the guy who took me said, by the way, if you ever hear people say I'll take a rain check, well, it all started at Fenway Park.
Yeah,
so there you go. Maybe you didn't even know that.
I did not know that. I just
there you
something.
Go so
I can
there you
brag
go.
To Dylan that I know that.
Yeah,
now.
You can. Well, he'd probably tell you. I'm sure he'll know that.
Yeah. Yeah, we went to Italy that summer, and it was like sexy and fun, and we thought, hey, the wedding's crazy, let's go somewhere where we can like slow down, experience,
and where
somewhere
did you go?
Magical, mystical. So we started in Dublin.
Okay.
We went to Wicklow for a night, and then we went to Cork.
Okay.
Took a day trip to Kinsale, and then we went over to Killarney. I think that was our favorite spot. Okay.
It is a lovely spot.
Yeah, he's a hunter. He loved the red stag.
Okay.
The red stag population in Killarney was kind of wild.
I don't think
the
you're allowed to shoot them. You're not allowed to shoot them.
No, you're not. He shot them with a camera. He was very set on finding the Grand Master, who I guess is like the biggest red stag in all of Ireland. Yeah. And the woman at the hotel was telling him it was right across the road. So we spent hours looking for the Grand Master. I was like, what has my life turned into? I'm a deer hunter now. But So then we went up to, we did like Dingle, and we stopped in the Burren for a couple days and ended in Galway. And then we loved Wicklow so much, we went back to Wicklow for our last
time. You know, a lot of Netflix movies are made there.
Like
The Vikings and Valhalla and all those.
Yeah. Braveheart is Dylan's favorite movie.
Yeah.
Every time he watches it, there's a single man tear coming down his face on that last scene. And his one request for our wedding was that I walk down the aisle to the Braveheart execution song. Walked down the aisle to execution at Bannenbach or whatever it is. I probably totally butchered that, but that was the song I walked down the aisle to.
Yeah. So many movies made. And of course, in Dingle, the famous movie called Ryan's Daughter. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No, I have not.
So
seen
you
that.
Should have a look at that. It's an old movie. David Lean is the director, Robert Mitchum, and a woman called Sarah Miles.
Okay.
And it tells the story of Ireland in the 20s when the British were here. And the scenery is stunning. And you'll see Dingle and you'll see Kerry, and they purpose-built a village there called Ryan's Daughter. So there's one for your Netflix, go back in time. So
good to know. We left Dingle. There was a very nice man. We were lost. We go down this road and we thought, oh, we just went onto some private property. Like, we're about to get in trouble. We got to turn around. So we turn around. We park in this random little lot, and this man, like, starts walking up to us, and I'm like, oh, here it is. This is our trouble. We're in trouble for driving down that road, and this man rolls down the window. He's like, are you guys lost? We said, yeah. He was this cute little old man. He's like, well, I'm about to go into town, but I'll take you to where you got to go. Just follow me like 10 kilometers up the way, and I'll show you. And he spent the next hour of his life taking.
It's a very Irish thing to do,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, he had stuff to do, places to be, people to see, but he took the next hour out of his day to personally escort us to where we were going, give us every option about what we could do for the rest of the day. And it was just so sweet. It was like, we were only in Dingle for a day, but every time we think about Ireland, we think about that man we met in Dingle.
I feel I know you, Emily. I know so much about you. So I'm going to finish off with the project you're working on at the moment. Tell me about it.
The project I'm working on at the moment is called Falling in Love with Making Music Again. I left my record deal. It sucked the life out of making music for me. I think there was so much pressure on all the other parts that go into artistry. That
painting by numbers was a bit like painting by numbers, or
yeah, a little bit. It was weird. It's like, you know, you get signed for who you are, and then, you know, at the end of the day, you're a line item. You have to change to what they like, or, you know, if it works, it's they're doing. If it doesn't work, it's your fault. And I think I just felt a lot of pressure to please the people I was working with and impress the people I was working with. And I started putting so much energy into trying to keep all the plates spinning that I started falling out of love with the process of making music. And as we were talking earlier, like, that's what the way I like to describe it is, when you go through a breakup, you don't break up to get back together with somebody. You break up, you move on, and if that person is meant for you, they'll come back around. And if they're not, you'll know it. You'll wake up and you're in a different place and with different desires. And that's kind of how I feel about putting out my own music right now. I've broken up with it with no intention to get back together with it, just because I think that would contaminate the process of like growing and healing from kind of the ride I've been on the last 4 years. So I think there probably will most likely come a day where I get the itch and I'm like, I have something to say, and I'm going to say it. I'm going to put it out there. But until that day comes, I am falling in love with going into a room every day with other artists and other songwriters. And
you're a hopeless romantic.
I am. I love feelings.
Okay. Well, listen, on that note, we leave it. And it's been an absolute pleasure. I know so much about you now.
I know.
And thank you. And hope you enjoy your stay in Dublin.